Good evening and welcome, everyone, to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. An ever-growing number of people are coming to the realization that just maybe celestial beings have been influencing the history of this planet for a very, very long time. In my opinion, one individual on the planet who knows more about this than just about anyone is our guest of honor every hour. It's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
It's always terrific to spend time with you on this program. It's my favorite hour of the week. And according to our listeners, it's one of the favorite broadcasts we put out there. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, certainly welcome.
So what's happening in the universe today? There, we got a couple announcements. Maybe let's get these out of the way right away.
Okay.
Long time listener Jim Borth corrected me when I misspoke on last week's program. The emailer who has offered to transcribe the programs is named Nadim. I won't mention his last name, Nadim. So I apologize, Jim. I substituted Jim's name in place of Nadim's for some reason. I had a brain fart, and so I just wanted to correct that up front. And other thing is, I spoke with Riley yesterday, and he told me that from 3 to 5 o'clock this coming Thursday on Sirius Radio, he's going to make the announcement of, what did he call it, the relationship with the Mayan calendar and the, I can't remember the other words he used. Anyway, that's coming on. If you guys have Sirius Radio, you can tune that in from 3 to 5 on Thursday, and that announcement will be made. Okay, I don't happen to be a Sirius subscriber, Michael, so I'll just have to get it from our listeners after the fact. Are you a Sirius subscriber, Mike?
Oh, no, I'm not. I haven't listened to Sirius at all, actually.
I never have either. The equation, that's what he called it, the millennial equation or something along those lines. At any rate, you guys can let us know what's going on there. How about in the world this week, Michael? Anything happened that's alarming you or perhaps setting your mind a little bit at ease?
Well, actually, I've always, you know, been monitoring the sun, especially this year and next year, looking at it. And I do believe we're going to just, you know, kind of move on through 2012, right on to 2013. As far as the sun goes, it's been one of my key points in watching. And in cycle 23 was cycle 23 in terms of the 11-year sunspot cycle was very interesting at two peaks, a very active sun. And now in 24, we're seeing an actual very quiet sun in terms of number of sunspots, but in terms of its unusual activity like flares and coronal mass ejections and various celestial activities that are going on around the sun, and its electromagnetic activity toward our planet, it is very interesting because it has generated a definitely interesting effect. Some of them have been perhaps linked somewhat, you know, with some of the activities of our planet, and down to levels in which our planet is acting in terms of our weather and our crustal activities like volcanoes and earthquakes. Interestingly enough, the sun has been quiet, but it has had an effect. It seems that the quiescence in terms of sunspot activity, which is basically like electromagnetic whirlpools, are being exchanged for higher power magnetic or effects to, you know, our planet, because magnetism is one of the most powerful of all forces there is. As you know, it's considered a strong force. And it is very strong. And its effects are something that is not fully understood. In fact, when I was with the Celestials, they did use terms that relate to magnetism in terms of my understanding of things such as how the solar system was formed, how planetary accretion occurred in terms of static and electromagnetic activity or magnetic activity. And it's playing out. Presently, we're looking at today perhaps as being one day which may show, let's see what happens with the last three major class, M-class flares that, you know, left the sun a few days ago. It should be impacting us in terms of any particle radiation that may have come along with it. It's not a coronal mass ejection. It's a solar flare which pretty much ejects light-type radiation that is propagated at the speed of light. However, there are others that follow up that are slower and take a few days to reach. And apparently today's unsettled activity in terms of our geomagnetic field is interesting, because as I said, we're looking at that as probably one of the most powerful forces that have influence on the stability of our planet. And as we know, our planet is not stable right now.
Do you think we will see increased aurora borealis with these particles that are heading our way?
Well, as I said, it wasn't a CME, a coronal mass ejection, so we'll probably see something, but I don't think, you know, the glorious stuff. But it's headed toward our planet. In other words, the solar scientists are actually monitoring the sun and take a great interest in it. So it's headed our way. So it's in fact impacting our planet right now.
Of course, it's overcast here in northeastern United States. Well, northeastern Ohio, where we are, folks. Fascinating times.
Yeah, for Ohio, I guess there is a weather alert. I'm looking for some strange, anomalous weather over there. So
really?
Maybe I can take a look out on that.
I have not heard that.
Well, that's the, I guess, from the solar weather or space weather guys that are trying to say that. That area of the United States might be looking at some interesting weather.
Well,
it must be very bad, but
it's been,
could very well, you know, cause some interesting phenomenon.
It has been beautiful around here, although it's been a little rainy today. Mm-hmm. The weather has been in the 70s, high 70s and 80s. It's just kind of warm this time of year. It's not usually this warm this early. Many of the plants and vegetation are out, in some cases, 4 weeks early. So there might be repercussions from, you know, plants coming out before the insects are mature enough to pollinate them. But other than that, I can't say anyone's complaining about the beautiful warm weather early
in
the year.
That's what I thought, but let's see. It plays out for a while.
You know, I was laying on the couch the other night. One of my dear kitty cats shows up and plops something on the pillow next to me, and it's a live bat. And which kind of gets your attention when it's 2 inches from your nose. Have you heard, remember in previous programs, they were forecasting perhaps a near extinction event for bats with some type of fungus that was in their nostrils or something, and this was spreading across the country. You know, I can't say just because my cat brought in one bat that they're all surviving, but did you hear, I mean, has anything ever come of that? And do you recall us speaking of that before?
I haven't spoken on that. I remember Linda Moulton Hall doing a report on the bats concerning that fungus and how their hibernation was interrupted by that, and they weren't able to hibernate well. But there's also an interesting phenomenon that is also happening with not just bats, but many animals. And again, it goes back to their ability to navigate, and they're getting confused. in terms of navigating, you know, by their sensing, you know, direction. And of course, they sense direction by our magnetic field, that along with other things, but the magnetic field probably being one of the strongest effects. And that may be indicative of some kind of anomalous type of magnetic flux that travels throughout our planet. And that flux is interesting because it isn't, you know, when we think of playing around as a kid with a magnet, barymagnet, and throwing magnet iron filings on it and looking at the flux lines, and you see them as fixed because you're playing with a dipole magnet. But then again, we would get a little bit more excited and then put an electric motor, DC electric motor underneath, see if there's any changes, and see it more or less vibrate. Therefore, there is some changes going on. And our planet, of course, is not static as a dipole. It's got some kind of very lively activity. And these flux lines move around. And a good example of moving flux lines are sunspots, as well as the solar activity that goes on, because a lot of it is being generated as whirlpools of solar or magnetic flux in the magnetic flux lines that are making visible what we could not necessarily see in terms of you know, the outer magnetic field of, you know, whether it be our planet or sun. And from that example, we see some very interesting things that show that there is some interaction and in the animal die-offs and the while your bat probably mislocating its, you know, home roost, and being caught by a cat, your cat.
It's unusual. Cats usually don't catch bats.
Right. It's like it's flopping around and an easy catch. You know, that is definitely a problem because bats navigate by their sense of direction using the magnetic lines of flux, magnetic flux lines. You know, and they are getting confused as well as other plant animals. I was going to say plants, but there are plants, but animals more that do have the sense of direction that they use and are examples. And when they get confused, whoa, that's what, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, because that's a strong indication of, you know, how our minds get information. And interestingly enough, this is a side note. As a matter of fact, I talk about having received visions and things like that. I did, by the way, receive a mild vision this morning, not so very strong. But I playing around with a compass, noticed that right where I placed my head on my bed, the needle of my magnet, my compass needle, diverts by 90 to 120 degrees.
Jeez.
Right around where I leave my head. And that was like an interesting phenomena. And it's remained there, hasn't moved, stays there. So I don't know what caused that, except it could be the celestials have sent me some information, left some imprint in that way. But we also can receive that kind of information because it's all, you know, can be sent and leave some kind of information, maybe using some kind of a field that leaves a trace imprint on some of the other, some things around us. And for me, it was very, very strange to have seen that. But anyway, that's a very sophisticated magnetic radiation that sends information. That's I don't know, it may be that way, it may not be that way, but
fascinating.
I did get something this morning, which was a little, I don't know if I should talk about it. It's not all that.
It's Always your call.
It's important, I guess.
It's always your call.
Yeah. Would you like to hear and just kind of like wonder what it's...
I'm sure
I don't
our
really
listeners
know what they mean a lot of times.
Well, give it a shot. Maybe our listeners will help us interpret.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of trying to figure it out as I think about what I saw. And it was something that I just sort of wanted to refuse to look at because it seemed like it's not true. I'm making this up. And basically what I saw was Snow White, of all things. Snow White in the form of Disney cartoon Snow White. Fairly happy and being an image of representing, I think, something. Okay, let's go on from that point. And then she looked down, and at her feet, there weren't the seven, the little dwarfs. No. At her feet, at the level of the soles of her feet, were a mass of dark entities. Like, what is that? So I zoomed in and looked at it close up. And what I saw was, well, a whole bunch of people. An interesting thing about these people, they were all uniformed. And they were massing around there and swirling around until they looked like a flood of people, just numerous amounts, just at her, the level, of, again, at the soles of her feet. And very, very, small. And she looked down, and she was seemed pretty happy. And then they began to swirl around her more. And again, they were uniformed, but they weren't like marching men with soldiers with rifles or anything. Just seemed to be that way and seemed to be moving in order. Now, as it continued, I began to watch as she seemed to be trying to fight off some of the effects of it because not all of it stayed down. Some of it began to swirl around her and change her. And then I was at that point. This is a Disney character I'm looking at. And trying to say this is not something I need to pay attention to. And then the scene changed, and I looked at like a close-up of what all those little people were. And they were indeed uniformed soldiers, but again, no weapons yet, but getting very busy about getting something going. Then it went right back to this Disney character, Snow White there. And then at that point where I began to look at her clothes looked torn up a little bit, a little bit more shabby, not quite the same. And then I began to wonder what that meant. But to me, that Snow White is an American fable, if not it's a Disney-generated fable of, you might say, from the mind of one of the inspired visionaries of fantasy and the American fantasy or the American dream. And she may represent that, the American dream. And that sort of falls in line with other things that Nella said, that there will be a time when our country will not be the same. And apparently things are amassing. So the whole American dream is going to get, a bit shredded, but not destroyed.
Well, if you study history, folks, every single nation that used to be on top, that is no longer on top, had one of those tipping points where they had that same sinking feeling in their stomachs, too, that, oh, my goodness, maybe the best of times have passed for this country. I hope not, but, it could happen. Could be now. It might be the generation. The devastation of the last 10 years of our political system is kind of hard to overcome. This may be the end of the American dream. I certainly hope not. I wonder if Snow White, she's represents in my, of course, my brain interprets this. Disney is one of the wildly successful companies, a U.S. corporation. you know, representing the best of this country and what we used to stand for before we tortured people and started needless wars. But, you know, now to see it in tatters and it's not quite the same. And boy, I don't know. I don't know what I understand about the soldiers, though, you know, milling around her like ants or something. I don't
know.
Yeah,
like ants, pretty much.
So did you think that this was a neutral concept, or was this a negative or positive concept?
I think it's a concept that there will be forces enacted upon the purity, I guess, of what we see our nation as representing, you know, the pinnacle of freedom and liberties throughout the world, and of virtue and of all innocence. I guess Snow White represented a lot of innocence, too. And that's going to be, like, taken away, in a sense. So the youth of our land really will be looking at our country very differently than, as myself, as I'm a baby boomer, so, you know, looked at an upswing of society. And, you know, people, it seemed like when the space race was going on at the time of even that 1972, at a time in which Dan and Nella took me for that ride, you know, we're looking at, wow, you know, we're going to continue on, except for that stupid war that was happening at the time, the Vietnam War. But looking at, you know, things getting better and better, but apparently, if, you know, right around there, things have changed. I guess that's when Nixon, I guess, deregulated or took away the gold standard off the dollar, and it began to float freely as a world, trying to make it into the world currency, and it sort of became that in terms of oil. But it's, now all that is unraveling. I think that's what also looked like, her clothes are unraveling, and some of that mystique and fable or beauty of our nation is being lost in the turmoil of the many millions and millions of people that are churning around the world that are no longer looking at us in the same way, and they're beginning to see that the beautiful USA is not so beautiful as before. And in certain countries, they actually really hate us. Europe doesn't like us at all.
The actions of the former government of this country have created so many generations to come. When we killed maybe a million Iraqis and a lot, hundreds of thousands of civilians, Pakistanis, Afghanistan people, they hate you. They will hate you for generations to come. Why our leaders of this country don't understand that concept, I don't have any idea. You can't, if somebody comes into your house and kills your parents and kills your kids, you're going to hate that country forever. Anyway, okay, it's just, it's staggering sometimes, the stupidity of what we do as a nation. Keeping up with the news, and so we have more stuff to lose sleep over tonight. Greek is freaking out over there. France just kicked out their former president and put in somebody that said, you know, we're going to do things another way, which is sending shockwaves through the financial powers that be in the EU. And the Greeks are stomping their feet saying we're not going to pay. And, of course, the stock market took a heck of a hit today. Could this begin, you know, we've sort of thought this was all over. Are we looking at something that could seriously unravel things that we thought maybe was over?
Well, from many of those who are just, you know, this is not from the celestials, but from our own people around, and everybody's pointing directions. We don't see a stable economy or a stable recovery. You know, there's a lot of those who, even for the big institutions, I'm talking about major brokerage houses and things like that, they're looking at double dip now. Now, of course, the idea of double dip was always out there, but it was sort of like being snuffed out by the you know, the political machine. They don't want to talk about it. And in an election year, definitely not. However, that's not the case in terms of what even these brokerage houses see. However, after the dip, they do see a tremendous increase. And I also see that a tremendous wild chase to the top just before a tremendous fall. One of the things that was being reviewed by me in terms of what the book of Revelation shows in the Bible and what we already have seen as perhaps rehearsals of what would be the real play were the statements that were made by the captains of the ships who would say, you know, in 1 hour all of this has come to naught. And having seen already one of the absolute most important ports in the world, Singapore, absolutely come to a, you know, a standstill and have all these freighters just simply anchored out and just going nowhere because there's nothing to move around when the liquidity of the finances stop. Well, there is going to be, that was maybe just a preview of the real thing, because it did eventually increase a little bit, but not fully. You know, as celestials have been showing me, we're still looking at this overturn and change of how the way our globe, our world, and our system turns, because of a lot of it has a lot of legacy to a very, you know, very ancient and old methodology that was introduced in how to, you know, basically run the planet in the invention of various financial systems. One of the things that was in the ancient times of the Old Testament times was systems that poked their head up and merged with faith and religion. And these things were shown to have been worked with, and celestials themselves tried to make sure that they didn't propagate out to become major methodologies of the planet. And these were, one of these things was Baal worship, which was a type of merger of the religious and the financial and a real estate, where like the Baal priests were held a lot of power and things like that, and real estate and things like that, and running society. And those things were like kind of like were actually that were challenged by the prophets, and who were able to kind of like show them up. So this is something that's old, and it's kind of not fully part of the old thing, but still needs to be adjusted. And the old is the old rebellion that started the method, and it was shut down. We see that in the evidence of how our planet shows ancient, very old civilizations and temples that were sort of like linked together, but also linked in a way in which those minions, the ordinary people of the planet, were manipulated and used by this type of financial systems that were in place, actual monetary systems.
Folks, you are listening to, that's Michael in Maui. This is Project Urantia on Artist First. And if you have a question, you can email it to us at dj@artistfirst.com, and we'll read it live on the air. Ready for a few emails?
Yes.
There's a couple here from Matt in Orrville, Ohio. I'll give them to you separately since they seem to be a little unrelated. Dear Michael, please explain how you envision how we humans will encounter the great causeway / landing ramps you were walking up on the mothership.
Well, let's say you were taken up on this rescue mission, not as a let's say you're taken up as a, you know, your physical being, just as you are, and you rode this the giant V wing, these V wings that I saw there, you know, mile long perhaps wingspan, and you come into the landing bay. I don't know if you'd see, given the view as I was, Once you're in the landing bay, you'll see an immensely large flat field that would go on and on, much larger than most airports, actually, because they would land just not, you know, they don't need the runway space, but they do need the space to let the people go, or let have the ship or the V-wing dock at. And from that point, you pretty much walk into this open space, grand open space, and immediately adjacent to that grand open space is the causeway, which spirals out and around, and it's not steep. It's hardly noticeable in terms of its incline, but it's there, and it does have a certain curve to it. That curve, I'm not sure if it is at the lower part of the egg, essentially where the, if you were to look at an egg shape, and if you were at the very bottom of the egg, the diameter of that zone would be expanding outward toward, as you head up toward the middle of the egg. So it would spiral around and around. So I take the position in which the ships come in would be on the lowest level, one of the lower levels. And at that lower level is probably where you disembark. Immediately, you'd probably be allowed to view or to walk in the park, which is just adjacent to the causeway, or just at the causeway. From the causeway, looking out, you would also see the park. This is where we have the stream. This is where we have the trees, the birds, some of the animals, and perhaps a Bigfoot family or two, which Riley spotted. I didn't see it. But that I don't doubt that that is apparent there. And then you'll be moving along upward. And as you spiral along upward, there's more and more. If there are ways to move around in that area using types of, I guess, elevators, types of people movers and levitating discs. So, but ultimately, that'll be your first experience.
Well, his second question is, will these humans be still alive or brought back from the dead by those, quote, holes, unquote, in the wings of the Celestials aircraft that you have seen?
That I don't know. I do know they're definitely able to take you up, and there have been some who have noticed a blue beam coming out from some of these craft. Not sure if they were the large V-wing or the Deltas, but for me, it came out of Tan and Nellis, a smaller ship, which wasn't very large, but it was only a shuttle, I guess. But these people movers, my goodness, they could hold mile long. I mean, how many people do cruise ships hold, man? These things would hold a lot more than that.
Yeah,
but I don't believe there would be people who would be resurrected at that into essentially a mortal form. That would be sort of like going backwards.
Let's just for the sake of intellectual discussion here, let's take the position, okay, let's say on Thursday when Riley makes his big announcement, what if Riley says the following? This is only just for discussion's sake, folks. I personally have no idea what Riley's going to say. He did not tell me. What if he says, unfortunately, things are spiraling out of control, and there indeed will be an airlift sometime after Thanksgiving? What happens between now and then? And I mean, don't you think that would set into motion, perhaps, I don't know. What would that set into motion? Would people start freaking out? Would I bet he'd sell a hell of a lot of symbols, but I don't know. I'm just for the sake of discussion, what do you think the next step would be if he made a statement such as that?
Well, immediately prior to that happening would be what I was shown, which would be their version of saying hello, which would be an essentially an ever-increasing number of sightings of UFOs, essentially being broad daylight, as well as in the evening, but their number ever-increasing until coming to a crescendo. And I believe at or near that crescendo will be the lift.
Well, you have psychic powers. The very next email I was about to read to you from Greg Skiv was, do you feel there will be an increased sighting in alien craft before 12-12, December 21st?
Well, it's already moving upwards. If you monitor some of the various sites, you notice the increase in the number of sightings and documentation. Some actually recorded well on video.
Well, and okay, let's take the other extreme. What if Riley says, well, the Celestials have told me things are staying on a pretty good path and nothing's going to happen. There's no need for an airlift until perhaps things turn for the worst. And we just stay on status quo?
You stay on actually looking at the sign prior, which is the actual number or the number of sightings and the number of interactions with our planet in terms of what I've been pointing out, which is how our planet is being perturbed by the solar activity and other extra planetary objects that may be influencing the stability of our planet, as well as the number of these sightings of UFOs just increasing and increasing. I've been watching that, and I've been noticing that it is coming up to a point where they're getting more in number, and stuff is more dynamic, and you know they're going to continue on their increase until it would be undoubted that there's something going on, and that's about when we should see. Also, I wouldn't put it past them to actually let me know, and if things are going to require some people to get ready. They've already told me that perhaps there'll be some locations for people to be, and these locations tend to be high. I'm not saying they won't necessarily, you know, visit a place like an open field, low line. But there have been areas which I've been pointing out which were high, hills, and not necessarily tops of mountains, but maybe the side on a certain slope of a mountain that have been shown to me, but not necessarily saying when or why they were shown to me. I'm just surmising that maybe there is a lift there. Maybe that may happen. But knowing how they've just feed me information a trickle at a time. I don't get overwhelmed with information. It's hard enough to get a little bit and try to figure it out. To get a whole lot and try to figure it out would be a mess. But I believe they will be giving myself as well as Riley and others this information. I think when it came down to Nancy, she was told that there is more of an extension. So it was supposed to have been a while back, according to her. Now we're looking a little bit forward from that point. So I think I kind of agree that, you know, it didn't happen because the elements necessary to require such a lift and would not be in place. There will be a lot of interaction between human beings and celestials, but most of them, in fact, over 90%, maybe a very small percentage would be known that celestials have actually entered and actually did something with various humans who are being actually, you might say, chosen. As choosing is something that is on their prerogative. It's their personal choice, you know. It's not something that we declare, but there are certain elements to look for. And one of the most important is an element that searches for more, actually. And the presence of an active thought adjuster, divine fragment that has not been stomped upon and crushed, but one that has been more of a friend, and it can be aligned. And that is one of the signets. And I think it was my greatest signet sign that they would just hone in on me that night when I called out.
All right, well, let's hypothetically say that Riley does say something's going to happen. It's going to, and he gives a time frame. Mm-hmm. All right, that changes everything. And let's take the thought further. Let's say there is increased activity, and people start going, you know what? That Riley Martin guy spoke the truth. Oh, my God. And just the simple fact, if the average person who doesn't pay any attention to any of this stuff ever, they're far more interested on Dancing with the Stars than they are with what's going to happen to their lives. But if they came to the realization, if the world started to wake up to the fact that something was about to happen, if it's my understanding, only a teeny tiny fraction of humanity, you know, there's what, 6 billion? Is that what the population is of the planet about now? You know,
yep.
How many? They're not going to take 5 billion. They're going to take a really, really small number. I mean, hundreds of thousands, but basically 99.999% of everybody else is going to be stuck here. So if that would be the situation that 99% of the folks would find themselves in after they've come to the, oh, my God, realization something's going to happen, do you think we as human beings could get together and try to mitigate whatever was about to happen? Okay, if it's a meteor, what are you going to do? But, you know, what about the things that we can control? Do you think we'll ever get it together even in the face of something like that?
Well, that's what is hoped for. And the human will is sovereign. And it's nothing that they can overwrite. And that is one of the most precious elements of all that we possess is our personal will, our ability of free choice. And that is to be preserved. And as far as a meteor or asteroid, they can shepherd those out of the way and have done so both directions. In shepherding meteorites or large asteroids away from our planet or to our planet have been done in the past. So that's, I don't include that. The sun is one of the effects that they have been regulating somewhat. They may let go of that regulation. And as far as our climate, our social climate, our the global climate of culture and industry and the monetary systems, the way we go about our lives here, that is something that they don't want to adjust until everybody is in the point of willingness to adjust. And that comes at, certain turning points, of conscious turning points. So the entire global consciousness changes toward, we need to do things right, we need to do things better. And we can't go over and do the same thing because we end up in the same place.
Well,
and that's interesting.
But faced with the cold hard facts. Watching a ship take off with people who they're hoping will continue the species, leaving you behind. You know, one would think maybe we wouldn't care about what the price of oil was the next day. Maybe we'd kind of rally together and go, you know, I mean, we're all about to die, so. I mean, and we don't know that that's necessarily the case. I just wonder, based on, you know, the history of how people act in lousy situations, I don't know. You know, we don't have that great of a track record of taking care of each other, and when things go really bad, it's usually every man for themselves, if I understand history correctly.
Well, yeah, somewhat. There are those in the occultic side who look heavily upon, preying upon the concept of sovereignty as a unified globe of people, as to keep everything status quo. Now, as our planet goes through this reset, if we become one united planetary government, it would be intrusive for the Celestials to come over and say they want to take over things or rescue us or offer us a hand, because we already have a successful world. That's the whole problem that has been from the beginning, was how we would, not necessarily we, but those who have essentially not necessarily been aligned with the same celestial beings that I was aligned with. These are the ones who remain essentially on, you might say, the fallen side of philosophically, and want to be able to, say, dictate. And therefore, look, we've done this. The world is one government and one order. Therefore, you must acknowledge us as sovereign. Therefore, get out away from us and out of our face. You know, and we are the leaders of this world. You can't take it from us. These few are working extremely hard, and to try to gain that position. But it's not there yet, and I don't think it would be something achievable. And right now, anyway, and in our state. But that's going to cause a lot of ruckus, and it is still the motive of, I guess, many of those that look for how the world should be run.
We're rapidly running out of time, folks. There's a bunch of emails. I put them in a folder for next week. Excuse me, guys. And, of course, next week at this time, we will be able to discuss whatever it is, the announcement that Riley makes this week. Before we run out of time completely, I wanted to talk about the next topic for a couple of minutes, Michael. I was fascinated by a television show that aired on Science Channel called The Universe, and what they did was a comparative study on relative size of things in our solar system, and they went on to try to describe the vast distances in the universe. And one of the things that just struck me, so I wanted to bring it up, is they took an abandoned runway and they tried to illustrate, if you could shrink the size of the sun down to the size of a bowling ball, then the Earth would be a teeny tiny little bead that you might put on a little tiny necklace. You know, when they say that 1 million Earths could fit inside the shell of a bowling ball, if 1 million Earths could fit inside the shell of the existing sun, then just imagine a bowling ball that was empty, that it would take a million of these little beads to fill up. And then they put the sun at, you know, starting point zero, and 1 foot represented a million miles. So 93 feet down the runway is this teeny tiny little speck of a bead. And when you look at the, I mean, we're talking much, much smaller than a BB. And when you look way, way down there, almost 100 feet away, is this little tiny bowling ball, because you're quite a ways from it. And you start to think, that thing has enough gravity? That's what struck me. When you see these comparatively huge distances for the size of these objects, I was stunned that the sun could capture the Earth. You know, obviously, you know, physics doesn't understand gravity all that well. And after seeing this, I don't either. And then you start talking about planets farther out. I mean, it gets just ridiculous. And yet, you know, something is holding those planets in orbit. Something is, it's obviously there. The moon does affect the tides, but I'm not so sure we understand exactly how gravity works yet. Your comments.
Well, that's true, because that particular idea was hinted at. They said, think static electricity. They didn't have a lot of time to go through the details, but it was enough. He said, go back and understand electricity, powerful forces. And one of them is electrostatics, as well as magnetism. Gravity is a very weak force in terms of what physicists want to declare. In fact, it's so minute, they really can't understand it. But again, you know, I was able to get it from the celestials about, you know, expansion. And then expansion and physicality, the reality of our domain, and locked in step with time, and all of this has been falling in place in terms of the understanding of how these things work. But it's more electrostatic, electromagnetic, and all of these things, these powerful forces that have kept our solar system, actually allowed it to accrete and come into being.
My little pea brain, electrostatic just makes more logical sense when you can visualize for the first time and see exactly what we're talking about and the relative size of things. You know, a million Earths could fit into the shell of the sun, and how many beads. I just think if you took a bowling ball and you cut it, you know, and you wanted to fill it up, you know, you couldn't put a million BBs in there, maybe a couple hundred thousand, but you certainly couldn't put a million BBs into the shell of a bowling ball. Nowhere near enough space. And when you see how teeny tiny this is and how far away it is in relative distance, it's like, just doesn't make any sense. But there it is. I mean, I don't understand it is maybe another way to put it.
The king of electricity, Nikola Tesla, is something Curtis Cooperman has been working on his site, getting things more together. An interesting point, Z-Man, is that he got Riley to narrate a letter, and it's on the Nikola Tesla page of Hello Earth. Got Riley, within the last week or so, narrating this letter. And these letters have a lot to do with understanding electricity, and it's these stuff with Nikola Tesla have been smothered because, you know, people had let all that information, we had free electricity and all this kind of stuff.
It certainly has. And there, I truly believe there was some hanky-panky going on there. Maybe that's the wrong word. I think that, you know, he was deliberately suppressed, and, you know, we can see the results of that today. Well, guys, we are out of time. Looks like it's going to be an exciting week for those of you into this program. We're going to hear some news coming up this week. I haven't the slightest idea what he's going to say, but why don't you guys let us know, and it'll be interesting to see what happens after that. Michael, I always want to save time on every broadcast to say the following statement. Michael does this program because he told his celestial friends that he would do this. Michael has nothing to sell. He does not get paid to do this program. Artist First foots the bill for this program, and we're happy to do it. We have no paid advertisers. We thank you on behalf of all of the listeners, Michael, for your time and expertise, and look forward to having you back next week. Thank you again for all of your time and expertise, Michael.
You're certainly welcome. And aloha.